Hello.
You're on with Nick and Fiona.
In a normal American production, I'd probably get fired after a week.
Welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about movies and TV shows that are worth your time. I'm Fiona Williams, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Bassine. Nick, what are we talking about today?
Well, Fiona, as you know, we're gearing up for the holidays, so this episode we're going to devote entirely to movies and TV shows you can watch over the holidays. We also have an interview that you conducted with the director of Cold War, Pavel Pavlikowski, and we're talking about what we've been watching, of course. But first, Boxing Day.
It's a big day for movies. And this year, much the same, lots of big releases. There's no Star Wars movie out this year, so I think it's open slather on going to the movies. It's not getting amongst the every hour on the hour sessions of Star Wars.
Have the Star Wars movies been every year?
Yes. For the last, well, since they've been making new ones. It's normally a week or two before Christmas, but still going strong. Anyway, that's not happening this year.
That's right. What is happening?
Oh, other things. So we've been lucky to see quite a few of these in advance, and I've chosen to speak about the ones that I would recommend.
Not the ones that you hated.
Well, in truth, I didn't hate any of the Boxing Day releases. Go to last week's episode if you want to hear other movies around the year that I did.
Let's start with Vice.
Let's. Multi-Golden Globe nominated Vice.
What do you say? I want you to be my VP. I want you. You're my vice.
Well, George, honey, I'm the CEO of a large company. And I have been Secretary of Defense. And I have been White House Chief of Staff. The vice presidency is a mostly symbolic job. However, if we came to a different understanding, I can handle the more mundane jobs, overseeing bureaucracy, military, energy, and foreign policy.
Yeah, right. I like that.
It's the story of Vice President Dick Cheney in the It goes through his whole life, his rise to become the most powerful vice president in U.S. history.
The quasi-president, if you like.
Right. And it's written and directed by Adam McKay, who did The Big Short, also produced Succession, one of the best shows of the year. And
it stars Christian Bale as Dick Cheney.
For me, I think it's very much worth watching. It was all about Christian Bale's performance for me. I thought he was great. He's very funny. He had the smirk. He had all the weight gain, the heavy breathing,
the comb over.
Yeah, all that stuff. And he looks just like him. It's uncanny.
He really does. And it is a great performance. At moments, it veers on impersonation, but also he's doing a really great impersonation. And to me, it kind of walked that line. But I think it treaded it well.
I wondered if it was more, when I felt like it was faltering, I felt like more is more the movie's fault than his necessarily. Because I didn't think there was a really deep movie built around that.
Sure. So it is the story of how Dick Cheney came to be the vice president to George W. Bush, being, throughout the ages, like in the Nixon era, and how his friendship and working relationship with Donald Rumsfeld covered decades and ultimately got him to the position he was in George W. Bush's running mate.
Right.
And George W. Bush, of all people, does not come out of this looking very good. He's pretty much played for laughs by Sam Rockwell.
As is Donald Rumsfeld.
Yes,
played by Steve Carell. Yeah.
Yes. So the casting on this, if you saw The Big Short, it's a lot of the same people. It's not Ryan Gosling and Matthew McConaughey, but almost everyone else. And just the cronyism, and you can't watch this and not see it as a comment on the current occupant of the White House.
They basically blame Cheney for everything that we're dealing with right now.
Everything. There's a montage. Everything. And it's played for laughs, and it's by no means a hagiography. It's not a biopic and authorized by any means.
No, certainly not authorized.
Can't imagine it would be. But it's a hell of a time. Amy Adams has a great role as Lynn Cheney, his supporter, agitator. Yeah, she's right in there as well. Sort of, it's not wife on the end of a phone line kind of a role. She's very active in this movie.
Yeah. I just wasn't sure that we actually answered the question of why or how he became the person that he was, you know, this evil genius, ruthless, cold-blooded, et cetera, et cetera. By the end, I couldn't tell if we were meant to think that he was doing it just for the sake of power or because he wanted to please his wife. Like, there's no, thematically, I just wasn't sure what we were getting at.
Well, I don't think there's one definitive answer as well. I like the way the story was told. Like, it certainly, there's a narrator. And yeah, there is kind of a spoiler element if you sort of give away too much. But yeah, there's this random person narrating and there's a bit of to-camera situation and that sort of switches at another time. Yeah, and his heart problems come in as well. There's quite funny moments where he, in a very downplayed way, he just says, I think I'm having a heart attack.
Yeah, those are the funniest parts.
Maybe I need to go to hospital.
Very funny.
Yeah, great moments like that that punctuate the story at various times. But no, I mean, it all looks at how the Gulf War happened, why Iraq was in the spotlight after 9/11. Yeah, it's all sort of backroom meetings and the cronies plotting while W is happy that someone else is having to do all the hard work.
Did you ever become aware or felt like you were watching a kind of left-wing propaganda? Like maybe it had a very Michael Moore kind of feeling to it.
And there's a bit of a joke at the end that acknowledges that. But no, I thought at the time, like if Michael Moore made a narrative feature now, like one of his political ones, not some of the other ones he's made, you know, this is the movie that Michael Moore would be doing if he was doing dramatized versions of historical figures. Yeah, it's going for the same audience and it's playing it for laughs and it's quite outlandish, but it's also based on truth or a version of truth, as they say the stuff.
I thought that there was a little bit of a failing in that because there was much more moralizing and editorializing than in The Big Short. Mm. And The Big Short is, I mean, they're going through a huge financial catastrophe that was felt all over the world. I don't know. It just seemed like excessive in this one, I think.
Yeah, it's the same template of movie making. Yeah. Like it's kind of this wild, outlandish story based on factual events.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it probably worked better with The Big Short. Well, I know it did. That's how I feel.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, I didn't know what I actually expected. And I came out going, yeah, that was really good, but I don't love it.
Yeah.
What that's worth.
I think it's still worth watching, but yeah, I didn't love it.
I love the way it was told. Like, I think he's got a great directing style.
It's very energetic and moves really quickly. It's over 2 hours long, but I didn't really feel the length.
It did not feel it.
Yeah.
I think it's almost 2.5. Two and a smidge and did not feel it.
Yeah.
So that's Vice.
What are we talking about next?
Another Boxing Day release is The Wild Pear Tree, a Turkish film by Nuri Bilge Ceylan, who won the Palme d'Or a couple of years back with The Winter Sleep. And I love his movies. Speaking of length, his movies never go under 3 hours, I don't think. But they feel really fresh. And I remember his film Once Upon a Time in Anatolia. I saw that and I wanted to go right back in and watch it again. Loved it. So there's a way to make a 3-hour movie that doesn't feel like a 3-hour movie, whereas other people make a 90-minute movie and it feels like a 3-hour movie. So anywho, this is his newie and it is another 3-hour film. And it's the story of a writer who returns to kind of the small village where he's from. And he has a little bit of an elevated sense of self and sort of looks down at his neighbours and family and whatnot because he's trying to make good and, you know, small town syndrome kind of thing. But also he kind of has to make nice with everyone because he wants them to fund his next book, which is about them. So he's treading that line. And his father, he's a bit of a deadbeat. He's a gambler and kind of spends the money before it hits his pocket kind of thing, unless his mum can get her hands on it to feed the family first. So this is all in Nuri Bilge Ceylan's style. It's quite allegorical and, you know, it kind of weaves a very intentional story, but it takes its time to tell it. So it kind of looks at his father's foibles. He's ashamed in the town, but, you know, he's upfront about his vices, whereas others, you see that they've got their own ones going on, but they're not upfront about it. And it kind of makes that connection of, is it better to just actually be open about your own shortcomings? Yeah, and the title is, of course, about the trees from the region, which are a bit misshapen and imperfect, much like the people.
Right.
Yes. Anyway, I'd recommend it. It's beautiful.
Okay. So there's a few other movies that are already out, kind of family-oriented, and I think I've mentioned a couple of them before. The Nutcracker in the Four Realms was one of my most hated movies of the last year. I wouldn't recommend that. Didn't have a good time. The Grinch. It was all right.
Okay.
Nothing special. I've mentioned this before, but everyone should definitely see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. It's one of the best movies of the year. It's really, really great. Really fresh, exciting take on Spider-Man. So I liked it so much, I went to see it again with my son. It was his favorite movie of the year. Well, I stuck around for the post-credits scene this time.
You're going to stick around.
And what's interesting about it is I think that it does a great job with fan service. In addition to being just a great movie that stands on its own, there's so many little references to the Spider-Man era comics that I, you know, kind of grew up with. And it's very funny. I won't spoil what it is, but it was pretty good. Even on second viewing, it holds up remarkably well. I'm sure it's going to be on nominated for an Oscar. And it's on lots of best movies of the best of lists, not just mine, although mine was the most important one.
Yours was the best list.
Yeah.
Except for mine.
A movie I can recommend a little bit less confidently is Mary Poppins Returns.
Which is out New Year's Day, I think.
It's out New Year's Day. Mm-hmm. Did you love did you see the original Mary Poppins?
Have I seen it? Yes. Yeah, I have great affection for it. Well, I saw it very young and kind of have caught it a couple of times since. So yeah, it's full of whimsy and wonder.
Are you motivated to see this new one?
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I feel like the people that would love it the most might be the ones who loved the original.
Sure. And people with kids during the holidays and want to go into an air-conditioned theater.
I didn't love it. I found it kind of boring.
Hmm.
And I didn't realize it was going to be a musical until they started singing.
How could you not realize Mary Poppins is going to be a musical?
I just forgot. I just forgot. And then they started singing, and then I thought, oh, no.
Well, Lin-Manuel Miranda is in it, so that should have been your first clue.
Yes, except that he didn't do the music. And I ended up, not that I haven't seen Hamilton, I've heard the music, it's very nice. So he has one rap-ish song that's kind of okay. Emily Blunt is pretty good.
It's a good likeness. Yeah, I have nothing against the movie. It's just probably I'm not going to catch it, but it's very good costume design. I think she works as the character.
It looks good, and it's shortlisted for
all of the things.
Yeah, all the things.
Good luck, and a star is born you.
But she's very likable, and she has really good chemistry with Meryl Streep in this one scene, which I liked that one scene.
Okay, so not so much a recommendation from you, and I haven't seen it. One I also haven't seen, but I'm very keen to, is The Favourite.
Oh, me too.
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Looks really good.
Anywho, can't talk about one we haven't seen. But one film I have seen and topped my best of list is Cold War.
You loved this movie.
I love it. So
I can't wait to see it.
You should. It's out Boxing Day.
I loved Ida, his other one.
Yes, the director, Pavel Pawlikowski, his other film, Ida, which won him the Oscar a couple of years ago. So if you remember that one, that was the story of a novice about to take her orders in Poland in the 60s, and she found out she had Jewish heritage and then went on a bit of a quest to see what happened to her family post-Holocaust. Incredible film, as is Cold War, which has nothing to do with that story. But again, it's another black and white film set in the 60s behind the Iron Curtain, and it's about this tempestuous, dysfunctional relationship between two musicians. And it spans about a decade over the toing and froing of this tortured relationship. So it opens with two musicians looking to put together a musical troupe that represents the homeland in a sort of a folk presentation, like a very, present a great face to the communist overlords. You know,
what kind of music is it?
Well, folk songs. Okay. So they're going from town to town in a banged up old van, trying to capture the spirit of songs, folk songs from around Poland, from which then they'll put together a musical troupe, singing and dancing, spectacular, to tour and be proud patriots.
Sure.
And anyway, part of the lineup, in comes this young ingenue who clearly has a bit of a sketchy backstory and probably told some lies to be able to get in the lineup, but she has this incredible voice and she stands out, and hence love blossoms between she and the band leader. Bad luck to his partner, who has a face like thunder. She's incredible. I won't go any more with the plot, because you just walk in their shoes for the next decade, and it's incredible. And loosely based on Pavel Pawlikowski's own parents. Oh. I'll let him tell the story. But yes, largely inspired by his own parents' tortured, tempestuous love story.
Interesting.
By which he was an observer, shall we say. It's incredible. My tip is it's probably going to win the Oscar, but it's a strong lineup this year. It's just made the foreign language film shortlist.
Now, you had a chance to talk to the director, didn't you?
I did, yes. We had.
How did it go?
You tell me. We're about to listen to it.
Hello.
Hello, Pablo Pawlikowski.
Speaking.
Pablo, thank you so much for joining us on the playlist. With Cold War, you dedicate this film to your parents, this wild yo-yoing love affair. Can you tell me more about their story and how it taps into the story on screen?
Well, I dedicated them because of their presence on the screen. They're the inspiration for the couple, for the heroes in the film. In fact, they get their real names. Mm. And it's set in the world of my parents, of the times when they met, fell in love, and complicated their lives in the late 40s, early, up until the early 60s. So this is the character, the world, it's all what I've inherited from my parents, and their tempestuous love affair, which was on and off, lasted for 40 years. Is inspiration and a bit of a blueprint for this story, although it did change quite a lot of details just to, not to be hamstrung by too much truth.
Yeah.
But it's very much in the spirit in their spirit, the whole film, the mess, the chaos, also the humour, and the sad ending.
Right, yeah. And when did it occur to you, or when did you realise that you wanted to tell a version of their story?
It's never so concrete, but it's been, you know, never one exact moment, but the story's been with me ever since they died in 1989. Mm. That kind of couple, I've attempted to kind of write similar stories for a while, and never quite got it right, but 4 years ago maybe, or 3 years ago after Ida went out into the world, I realized that the time was right to actually do it. And that I had the tools, and I knew how to tell it elliptically rather than boringly, you know, like some kind of biopic.
Sure.
And I found the kind of visual key to how to do it. So basically, I had to mature as a person, as a filmmaker, to be able to tell it well.
Sure. And you didn't write yourself into this, you know, there's no child in the story. Is that intentional?
No.
Obviously, it's intentional.
No, the child was... No, it's a kind of afterthought. I mean, I finished it, you know, as I said, I compressed it to 15 years, you know, so
yeah.
I kind of invented a different ending. So the child doesn't bring them together, but what does, what fills the role of a child was music in this film.
Nice.
Music becomes the character. The thing that brings them together, keeps them together, illustrates the different moments in their life and their love, the ups and the downs, the changes of location, the changes in time, and it's the same music that accompanies them throughout, but it reappears in different guises, you know.
Mm-hmm.
First folk music, then as a kind of official folk music, then as jazz and chansons, and then finally as kind of rockabilly pop.
Yeah.
So they have music in common, but not a child.
Yeah, sure. And how? Yeah, I think it's absolutely so beautiful the way you weave the music in, and just the period details as well. You know, you don't. Others might force it, and you know, might have really overt production design to sort of give it a sense of time. But you know, you're so spare in the way that you give little hints to the period. You know how others sort of tell a period story and it brings a certain stuffiness because it's set in the past, but, you know, your stories absolutely don't do that. And I'm just curious, I guess, how you do it, but also what you intentionally don't do in order to bring that.
So I try not to clutter the image and the soundtrack with too much information. You know, like usually, very often when they do period films, they really try to prove the period, you know,
with
an inordinate amount of effort to illustrate the period, you know, whereas I think the key thing is kind of good emotional through line, good truthful acting, and a kind of a visual shorthand for the period. So just tell the big thing by small things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's my approach to photography, you know, it's to suggest as much as possible with showing as little as possible, yeah. But it works on people's imagination, you know. The main thing is that the characters are to the fore, you know, that the emotion is there, that the truth of the moment is there, and we don't spend time on lavish decorations and sets, and you know, which is kind of dead time usually. You know, you get that in British period films and mm-hmm. series a lot, you know, whereas I think we should cut to the chase, and, yeah. and the rest is just, you know, additional pleasure, but yeah. not the main thing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I understand you're not all that rigid about sticking to a script when you shoot. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. I not even when I shoot, you know, all the time. You know, when I write, there's like 150 verses I change. There's no end to the writing. There's no moment of to the final script. Well, there has to be a script on which you raise the money, and it's usually not the best script, but the most informative, you know, so mm-hmm. people give you the money, or the investors, or other the institutions that in Europe handle the money, then when they read it, they feel kind of informed and clever about the whole thing. And that script usually has a lot of adjectives and adverbs, you know, that color, you know, that tell you what you're supposed to feel. But then the script I go into production with is usually much shorter, and it's, you know, 60 pages max, you know, so sometimes less, sometimes, but it leaves scope for the cinema, for the invention, for the visual treatment of the film, and for new ideas which crop up all the time. Not like different story ideas, but how to tell, you know, scenes better than what you'd imagined sitting behind your laptop. Mm-hmm. You know, very often you get much, you know, inspired by your own film. You think, oh, the film has a life of its own, and actually that scene will completely bring it down. That scene good on paper and that everyone seems to have liked. But I have a much better idea mm-hmm. now that we're actually shooting the thing. So I try to shoot just 5-day weeks and then have one day to rest and one day to edit and rewrite, add, take away, all that kind of thing. So the film has a life of its own and is in perpetual kind of movement is the wrong word, but, you know, is alive to me.
Yeah.
And it probably comes from the fact when I was I started out as a documentarist. I made kind of constructed documentaries, and I always had that kind of freedom to take, you know, step away and kind of just change it a bit and come up with better things that were I'd imagined and recut it.
Yeah, yeah.
So all that to me is like a guarantee that you're not going to get stranded with a half-baked script or not a very good script, which is what I think happens most of the time with cinema.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, you must be well supported to be able to make the films this way, sort of, you know. And I guess you've earned the ability.
Yeah,
well,
you make very low budget films, you know. I mean, yeah. You have that kind of freedom. You need to not spend too much money. So the first fiction film I did was like something called Last Resort. It only cost £300,000, but already that gave me a certain amount of freedom to cast who I wanted to shoot and sometimes reshoot or shoot different scenes than I wanted, and I just can't weed myself away from that approach. And with each film that kind of plays its money back or has success, that gives me a little bit more leeway to do that at a higher budgetary level. But in a normal American production, I'd probably get fired after a week, you know, so I have no illusions about that.
Yeah, stick to what you know, it's working for you, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And, I mean, I have to ask about your actors and how you work with them, because, I mean, they're just incredible, and the intimacy that they have, and how much time do you spend with them? And I guess this process you're talking about probably helps that, but, yeah, how do you work on that with them?
Yeah, I mean, each actor is different, you know, so you kind of have to find the key to each actor. Some actors are very technical or very kind of set in a way, so you have to undo that and kind of try to make them be rather than act in front of the camera. Others are good at being spontaneous, but sometimes that's not enough, and then you have to kind of just work them out so there's more color, more different color to the performance. You know, it really depends on the actor, but I definitely give myself a time. You know, the prep time is quite long, and it's not just a time for rehearsals, but it's just time for being together, talking a lot, sometimes try out the scene in the park outside your house. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, just whatever works. But just time is a key factor, you know, time that's spent imagining our film together rather than working on other jobs. So in this case, I had the two key actors that were at my disposal for maybe 6-8 months. And in the case of Joanna Kulik, she spent a lot of that time learning to dance with this folk ensemble. You know? So she traveled to this folk ensemble outside Warsaw twice a week and spent a lot of time there, which was actually not just about dancing, but she can imbue the mentality of being in a collective and the kind of vitality of these young dancers and the esprit de corps, the all sorts of things which helped her with her character.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, Tomasz Kot, who played Victor, had to learn the piano and conducting, and that was quite a big effort. And
right.
Very often these physical exercises actually help you with a character too, give you a certain kind of attitude, muscle memory, and all sorts of things which then are very useful to build the character.
Yeah.
And with most actors, you know, either you kind of bring them down a bit, you know, we have too many mannerisms and kind of acquired acting techniques from television and theatre. Sometimes you kind of, on the contrary, you know, build them up or give them space to be more free. It really is individual, you know. I've noticed with each film, you know, every actor has different requirements.
Yeah, for sure. And an enormous shout out as well to your supporting actor. Is it Agata? Is that her name?
Agata, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, she's not in it very much, but she has a face like thunder.
She's fantastic.
She's incredible, yeah.
I didn't have, you know, I mean, like, we'd work together, you know, so with her, I don't need to do anything.
Yeah.
the lines, and she knows exactly the tone that's required, and she knows I like it stripped down and sharp and good timing, but no great emphasis, you know, that kind of thing. So that character was already, I knew she'd be playing that character as soon as I invented it, you know.
Yeah, no, she's perfect in that role. And the troupe, those kind of troops, are they still around, or are they sort of a relic of the past?
No, you know, these folk ensembles, there are two big ones and a lot of small ones, but two famous ones, and they're still around.
Mm-hmm.
They went through a tough patch when communism collapsed because they were very much state-sponsored and very expensive to run.
Mm.
You know, they have their chateaus expropriated in 1948
right.
and given to them. And they are big, they have a big personnel, you know, it's a big ensemble. So they had problems, but they still exist. Their repertoire hasn't changed much. It's great. And not only do they still exist, but the current government, which is not Marxist-Leninist, as you know, but it's ultra-nationalistic, they've kind of adopted them, especially the one, Mazowsze, the one that I worked with, and decided that it represents the true face of Polish culture again. So history is bizarrely repeating itself, you know.
Yeah.
So they actually pumped money into this ensemble. The last year or so, they've been on, you know, they were in hard time. They were kind of doing badly financially, but suddenly they got this injection of cash and they appear at state events now. So bizarrely, you know, they appeared on Polish TV recently. There was this kind of official opening of a Polish Airlines, Beamliner flying to America, and some ministers were there and officials, and suddenly this folk ensemble appears, singing and dancing, but, you know, folk songs.
Yeah, sure.
And a friend of mine rang me and said, "Of course, we think your film is on telly, but it's in colour, so
it's been colourised."
Anyway, so they've become the favourites of the Ministry of Culture again.
Wow.
The real survivors.
Yeah, they really are. Everything old is new again, isn't it? And speaking of the government and how that kind of can feed into your films, the response to Ida, you know, we don't have to go into all of it, obviously, but what was that like for you, and how have you emerged from that, if you, you know, to work in Poland?
Divided into, you know, by half, more or less. So half of Poland adored Ida, the other half detested Ida, not because they'd seen it, actually, but because the ruling party, which was then launching an election campaign, told them that it's an anti-Polish film, so they kind of staked that on trust that it's anti-Polish, which is complete rubbish.
Mm.
So Ida, I was in the bad book over Ida, and they kind of used it as a tool of propaganda for the election campaign, you know, like she started a petition against it and blah, blah, blah. Not that, the black and white art film was totally harmless to their kind of electorate who never go to see that kind of thing. But because it started winning an awards, all the awards possible, and then Oscar, suddenly became a political fact. So they kind of used it to say, look, Poland is bad mouth. You don't have to see the film because it's boring and so on. But we tell you, it puts us in a very bad light. Trust us, sign this petition. And look, there is a conspiracy against Poland. That's why it's popular in the West. That's why, it's done well in Hollywood, because you know who rules Hollywood.
Oh,
so it was a nasty, vulgar smear campaign, which helped them with the election. And now that they're in power, they kind of slightly overshot the mark. And they realize that they need filmmakers, because they're trying to kind of, there's a Ministry of Culture, there's a film fund, so somebody's got to make these bloody films, and most filmmakers are not at their bidding.
Mm.
So they've calmed down a bit, and with this film, because it's hugely popular in Poland, it's had like 850,000 admissions, they are kind of trying to be nice, nice to me, and they're kind of trying to co-opt it, and they actually put some money towards the film fund, which now they've taken over, put some money towards the film going to Cannes, because we needed some money to show it in Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to be nice, but I'm keeping my distance. They do have a narrative which is very primitive, unartistic as hell, world is very, very simplistic, our history is very unproblematic, and we're just victims or heroes, and so on and so on. Trumpism is spreading everywhere, and Poland was Trumpist before Trump, the current government.
Yeah.
So not great, but then again, somebody has to make the films, and the film's done well, so that it's kind of escaped their clutches anyway, and let's hope, other filmmakers will have the same amount of freedom still to make films that they want to make, not films which are at the bidding of the Ministry of Culture and the narrative that they want to sell to the world.
No, absolutely, very well put. We like to end by asking our guests what else they've been watching. Like, do you get a chance to watch many other films? I know you're promoting your own one, but
I'm always looking out for good films, and it's a good year for films, So I like quite a lot. I like The Favourite, I like The Birds of Passage, Roma by my friend Alfonso.
Yeah.
Maron. What else was good? The Korean, South Korean film, The Burning, really interesting.
There's a lot of good
films this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always cheers you up when you know that cinema is, of course, all this kind of Netflix business is a bit worrying because...
Yeah, what do you make of that?
It's strange when some kind of monopoly is growing, and then it's also scary that the idea that cinemas might not exist anymore soon.
Mm.
That everything will just be shown on a big screen at home, But I love the idea of going to somewhere to watch a film in the dark with other people. I grew up with that, and I think it's a wonderful ritual that we shouldn't be deprived of. But then there's certain, historical developments you can't stop, so you just say, this is what happens, it happens. People still tell stories and make films somehow. But I think it's, any kind of monopolies, scary, because they can be nice to you for a while and then they can destroy everything with one stroke.
Anywho. So true. Well, look, thank you so much. We've covered a lot in this short time, but I really appreciate talking to you, and I love your film, in case you can't tell.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. All the best.
All the best. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So it was super interesting how he made it not so strictly autobiographical.
Yeah.
That could be tricky.
Yeah, he didn't put Baby Pubble in there.
That was fantastic. Gotta see it.
Well, you should. And Cold War is out Boxing Day.
Now, Fiona, you can go to the movies, to the theater to see movies.
Yes, but then you run the risk of being surrounded by terrible people.
Oh, my God. Do you ever? If you're tired of people being on their phones all the time, you can just stay at home. Do you have any recommendations for things that people can stream?
I sure do. There are some great movies at SBS On Demand, as it happens. One that has just recently come to the service is I Am Not Madame Bovary. which, yeah, I did speak about when it was in the cinemas about a year ago, Chinese film from Chinese director Feng Xiaogang, superstar director, with Fan Bingbing in the lead. And I love this movie. And it is sort of a dark comedy with a bit of a circuitous plot of a woman who was married, and she and her husband agreed to get a fake divorce in order to qualify for an apartment that was for single people. But the bastard, he actually took the divorce as real and up sticks and left. She's understandably quite upset about that and goes to various local authorities and up through the justice system in China to try and get this divorce annulled.
Right.
If such a thing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Get them to
ignore
the divorce. Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. So that then they're officially married again and she can divorce him.
Right.
Right?
Damn right.
Follow the logic. So anyway, so it's sort of that dark kind of comedy there. And it's frustrating going through all the labyrinthine, you know, local justices all the way up to the big red room in the big city. So it's incredible and quite, if you stay with it, quite beautiful the way it ends. Love it.
Fantastic.
I'm not Madame Bovary.
Great.
Yes. What would you recommend?
So I've got a couple of TV recommendations. I've talked about it before on the show. You're the Worst. Seasons 1 through 4 are available just ahead of season 5, which is coming to SBS Viceland and SBS On Demand in January. But I just finished watching 1 through 4, and it's a very funny show about the misanthropic adventures of a couple of very hateful people in LA. And
Great. And, you know, particularly at this time when people have a bit more time on their hands, maybe you even get some new devices for over the holidays, Christmas and whatnot. Why don't you stream something on it like that?
Absolutely.
I've got another movie, and this is not festive, and I guess none of the ones I'm recommending are, but Daniel Blake.
Great movie.
Great movie.
It's not festive.
Nope.
That is not festive.
But important, and you should watch it.
Yeah,
and
it's great.
It won the Palme d'Or a couple of years ago. Wonderful story of just walking in someone's shoes and just the another labyrinthine. What is with me at the moment?
Are you going to recommend Labyrinth next?
No, but the nightmare of dealing with the public service and trying to get benefits. And yes, this I didn't even realise the connections to I'm Not Madame Bovary when I made this list. Anywho, it's wonderful and heartbreaking and just authentic, gorgeous, all the adjectives. Watch it.
Yeah,
by
it's a great
Daniel
movie.
Blake.
I'm going to recommend another TV show. I just realised this today, but Search Party is still available the first 2 seasons. I'm not sure when the 3rd season's coming back, but it will happen at some point. And in the meantime, you should watch these first 2 seasons. It's an incredibly funny show, really sharp, nasty satire. Everyone in it is hilarious. John Early, especially. I mean, they're all good. Mm. Meredith Hagner. Friend of the show. Yes, that's right. Alia Shawkat and John Reynolds. Everybody, all 4 of them, so good. Please watch this show.
It is good. I haven't finished season 2, so that's what I'm doing on my holidays.
Hurry up.
I know, right. Another movie, not about the public service, this one. We need to talk about Kevin.
Still haven't seen it.
Really?
What's the new one that came out that was...
From friend of the show, Lynn Ramsey.
Oh, yeah, of course. I really liked...
You
Were Never Really Here, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Anywho, this one is from a couple of years ago. Tilda Swinton playing the mother of a boy who commits an atrocity at the school, and she's living, it's all post that, and it's she's reflecting back of what did I do? Did I make him turn that way? And the boy is played by Ezra Miller before he took on DC. DC, wasn't it?
Flash.
Yes.
He's Flash.
Yes, he is Flash. In this, he's Kevin. And I think it's wonderful that this. So anywho, it's bit dark, but Merry Christmas.
I just want to quickly remind everyone that they should watch Brokeback Mountain. I love this movie. It's on demand. It's a beautiful story. Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal are both really good in it. Super, super sad. Mm. I was reminded of that when I rewatched it again recently. That's it.
Mm. Another one super sad. What is with us? End of year melancholy setting in.
Well, we covered the festive stuff at the beginning.
We did.
Yeah.
Volver.
Well, great movie.
Yes. Is available at SBS On Demand. Pedro Almodovar, story of ghosts. And the it takes the idea. Well, Volver is called return in Spanish. Yeah, it looks at sort of a deceased mother who is quote unquote living and helping out around the house, and it's kind of, you know, it's beautiful and sad and wonderful, and I'm going to catch that again over the holidays.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I've got one more. Is this too much?
Okay. No, it's never too much.
And just for something completely different, I've got The Untamed, Mexican film from Amal Escalante, and it's the story, bear with me here, it's the story of a regional town which is kind of pretty dreary, and people are all kind of loveless marriages and lonely, or they're closeted self-hating gay men, or one in particular. But some of them are getting by on clandestine trips to a woodshed over the other side of town to be probed by an alien sex monster.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
You knew I was going to say that.
Why not?
So that's, by the way, this is happening other side of town. And, you know, looking at, kind of makes life more bearable if you get your end away by a beast that makes, you know, the rest of your life is okay if this is something that you can have happen. Yeah, it's not played for laughs. Like, it's a very realistic film until it's not. And much like Spielberg, doesn't show the shark very much in the film.
Yeah, right.
But then there's a bit of a reveal.
Okay.
Hello, alien sex monster in the woodshed.
Sort of. Sounds a little bit like The Grinch.
I'm sure there's an essay somewhere that does an analysis of the two.
Well, that's a wide variety of movies and TV shows you can watch.
That's a weird spot to end on. But yes, I've seen them all. I can recommend them all.
Well, that's all the time we have for our show. Make sure you subscribe to SBS The Playlist wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a review. Give us some stars. Say something nice that helps people find the show. If you want to get in touch, we're on Facebook and Twitter at SBS Movies. I'm on Twitter at Nick Bassine.
I'm on Twitter at Anything But Fifi.
The Playlist is produced by Dan Barrett, with audio and mixing by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next week.
Thanks for listening.